Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the City of Branson Planning and Zoning Commission meeting for July 7th, the year 2020. Appreciate your attendance here and want to welcome all of the commissioners back and again say thank you for your taking your time from your busy schedules to serve the citizens of Branson. Appreciate all of that. Joel, we probably better take roll just to make sure we've got everybody we need.
Yes. Commissioner Davis?
Present.
Commissioner Howden?
Here.
Commissioner Lloyd?
Here.
Commissioner Nichols?
Here.
Commissioner O'Day?
Here.
Commissioner Richards? Commissioner Romine?
Here.
Alderman C?
Here.
Vice Chairperson Pinkley?
Here.
Chairperson Harris?
Present.
Chairperson Harris, we have 9 commissioners present. We have a quorum.
Thank you very much, Joel. Appreciate that. Would remind all of our guests and visitors, applicants and their representative that anytime you wish to ask a question or make a comment, please make your way forward to the podium down there. There should be a sign-in sheet. Please use that and be sure and state your name so that we can hear you and be able to ask questions or respond to your questions. With that said, we always make sure if anyone has a question or a comment that is not related to the items on the agenda, now would be the time to do that. Seeing none, hearing none, then we'll move along to our regular agenda items. Commissioners, you should have in your packet been able to find the minutes from the May 5th regular meeting and then the June 2nd and June 2nd study session and regular meeting, which of course ended up being canceled from lack of a quorum, but the paperwork was in there. Any of the commissioners have a comment or question or change or deletion or addition? If not, the chair would entertain a motion to approve the minutes from May 5th and study session and regular meeting from June 2nd.
I'll make that motion.
Commissioner Lloyd, thank you.
Second. Yes,
second, thank you. Any other comments by the commissioners? All those in favor of accepting the minutes as written, please signify by raising your hand. Oh, same sign, thank you. This time, we oftentimes have our elections for chairperson and vice chairperson in May, but because of elections, et cetera, it has been moved back to today. So as always, commissioners, we'll use the little pieces of paper that are in front of you. Those will be your ballots. And what, at this particular time, we'll do the chairperson first. We would need nominations for names to go on the ballot for that.
Chairperson Harris.
Yes. Commissioner Davis.
It would be my honor to nominate you, sir, Chairperson Clark Harris, to serve again.
Thank you, Commissioner Davis. Do we have another name to put on the ballot?
Do we need to second that, or is just a
one? No, it's just a nomination. It's just a nomination. Yeah. Just nomination. Okay. At this time, then, commissioners, you should have a piece of paper in front of you. We'll do the chairperson voting first. Write down the name of the person you so choose for that. Fold them in half, and we'll give those to Joel.
I quit on you.
Mr. Lloyd has been chewing on his pen again.
That didn't
Joel.
Work. Here you go, Joel. It's a red one, but I can't get it to go. All right, I think I do that.
Do this to it.
No.
Yeah.
I'm going to.
Hey, Joel.
It is. Process of democracy. Yes.
Chairperson Harris, we have 9 votes for you to continue as Chairperson Harris.
All right. Thank you very much. And thank you, commissioners. I appreciate your support and help during these times. We also need a vice chairperson, of course, to take over when I'm not here and to provide guidance at those times. And so I would entertain names for nominations for vice chair for the coming year.
Chairperson Harris, I would like to nominate Bob Nichols.
Okay. Commissioner Nichols, do we have another name? Yes.
I'd like to nominate Rick Davis.
Okay, Commissioner Davis. Is there anyone else who would like to nominate? No? Okay, then nominations are done at this time. If the commissioners would please vote on the piece of paper, fold it in half, and And then Joel will pick those up.
Chairperson, for Bob Nichols, we have 2, and for Rick Davis, we have 7.
All right. Thank you, Joel. Welcome aboard, Commissioner Davis, Vice Chair. Appreciate your opportunity to serve and look forward to working with you.
Thank you.
Joel, we did have some old business, I believe, from last time. So one of those is a zoning item. You would help us with that.
I've got a lot over here tonight. Yes, our request is for a special use. Oh, I'm ahead of myself, sorry. This request is for high-density residential HDR zoning for the property located at 135 Lakefront Drive in Branson, Missouri. This is a request brought forward by Daryl Hansen on behalf of Cabana Homes, LLC. And it is within the Lodges at Chateau Cove development, one we've dealt with quite a bit over the last couple of years. Its current zoning upon annexation is agriculture, or A, and again, it's to establish zoning for this property. We've got an image, albeit not updated, of this development area, but as you can see, it's in close proximity to the Chateau on the Lake there, as well as Tabor Rock Lake. From our vicinity map here on the next screen, you can see it is officially the last property to be zoned in the Lodges of Chateau Cove. We had thought we had reached that point a couple months ago, but after some research, we wanted to make sure that while we felt that it was somewhat in, we wanted it to be clear that this property was definitely in. So we went ahead and went through the process and reached out to the applicant to do so. So again, you can see it's right in the middle of the development, last property to be zoned, completely surrounded by other properties within the development that are already zoned high-density residential. And then the proposed zoning, as well as being high-density residential. As we always do, we include the orthometric views. These are a little bit more updated and show some of the early development, which this property was part of for the project. This is obviously during construction. It's not finished, but the property has since been finished. But we have all 4 cardinal directions if we need them during the discussion. They are available. So just a little background on the property itself here at 135 Lakefront Drive. As I said, we reached out to the applicant soon after the first of the year and traded emails back and forth and finally received a petition and application from the applicant in May, and then working through the process with the board, it was eventually annexed into the city in June of this year, just a short time ago. So the process again tonight is to establish zoning for this property, which is reflective and complementary of the proposed use. As well as the adjacent uses. This property is not included in the Community Plan 2030's preferred land use plan. They're shown on the right, but it does match the surrounding properties. If you remember when the preferred land use plan was created, we did not do any future land uses for property that was not within the city limits at that time. Something we'll look forward to doing, hopefully, with our update in the coming months. Again, the property has already been developed as an existing residential structure, with its sole use being for nightly rentals, which would continue to be an allowed use under the HDR zoning. As a result, staff recommends approval. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Joel. Any of the commissioners have a question for Joel at this time? Nope, seeing none. Does anyone here wish to make a comment or ask a question or in related to this particular item? Seeing none. Joel, any other comments?
Just happy that we can finally get this development completed.
Very good, very good. Okay, well, we would be looking at resolution 20-20-00003, which is recommending approval of a high-density residential zoning for 135 Lakefront Drive. So the chair would entertain a motion for approval.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Second, Lloyd, thank you. Any other comments by the commissioners? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by raising their hand. Oh, same sign. Thank you, commissioners. Thank you, Joel.
Welcome.
We have another one, I believe.
Yes, the applicant, Paul Raplica, who you may recall was here in attendance at the June meeting, was unable to join us tonight, so we're actually going to pull him up on phone real quick, if you can bear with
sure.
us. We'll give him a call.
That's fine, Joel.
This is Paul.
Hi, Paul. It's Joel Hornicle with the City of Branson. Are you able to hear us?
I can hear you great. Can you hear me?
Absolutely. Thank you for joining us. We're going to get started with your item, and if the commissioners have any questions, they'll make sure to direct them your way.
Very good. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. All right. This is a request for a special use permit to allow a telecommunications tower within the property located at 1972 State Highway 165, Branson, Missouri. The owner of the property is Champagne 165 Properties, LLC, and again, we have Paul Raplica on the phone representing Telecom Realty Consultants, LLC, as the applicant. The property's current zoning is community commercial, or CC, and then again, the request is to construct a telecommunications tower within the property. We do have an image here looking on the north side of the property towards the existing building, which is now a self-storage area. In our vicinity map, I'm showing an overview of the property. Again, the picture that we just had on the previous slide was taken from Champaign Boulevard here on the north side, looking to the south. Next vicinity map showing not only the existing zoning of the property or current zoning, but also the adjacent, which is mostly community commercial to the north, east, and south. However, there is the Welk Plan development located to the west, as well as the Point Royale development there, more to the south across State Highway 165. And we also include the existing land uses for the property in the surrounding area, which you can see this property is commercial, but has vacant property located to the west and to the east. And the orthometric views, again, in case we need them during our discussions. Into the details of the request, there is a leased site within the overall property, which equates to 900 square feet. The property itself is 4 acres, so again, we're talking about a small amount of property, which is leased for this use. It is located to the east or the rear of that existing building we saw in that first image, and they're proposing for a 100-foot-tall monopole that you can see here, kind of a side elevation of, and it's to house, first, AT&T equipment, both on the pole itself and on the ground, and then also have space for future carriers, again, both on the pole and on the ground. The ground lease area is proposed to be secured by a 6-foot-tall chain link fence, and it would be accessible roughly from that same area where that first photo was taken from off of Champaign Boulevard through a 20-foot access easement. Next, we have a very simple diagram showing the setbacks of the proposed tower. I know they're tough to see here, but the setback to the north is 186 feet. The setback to the east is 44 feet. The setback to the south is 530 feet. and the setback to the west is 210 feet. So in other words, showing there's quite a bit of setback from the property lines for the proposed location of the communications tower. And then we have the site plan, more detailed version there on the right side of the screen, which now we have a version where we zoom in a little bit so you can see more of the details of the layout. In this image, north is actually to the left. So we have the existing structure located here along the bottom or the west part of the image, and the pole, proposed pole located here next to the building. And then these boxes are a couple areas for equipment that are proposed. There's some other utilities, obviously, all running through this area. There's quite a bit going on, but they were able to squeeze it in amongst all those utilities in the buildings. Because we're looking at a structure with 100 feet of height within close proximity of the downtown airport, we do always work with applicants on the FAA Form 74601, which essentially is a notice of proposed construction and alteration so that it can be mapped in flight documents. Also, the FCC ARS, which is the antenna structure registration, is also required and something the applicant will need to take care of, all because, again, this is located within 20,000 feet off the end of the runway. However, because of the height only being 100 feet, they are not required to have a light on the top of the tower. There was a great figure that was included in the Community Plan 2030, here shown to the right, which is figure 4. What it shows is visibility of certain areas throughout the community through visible points. This area that we've got outlined in red circle there towards the bottom of the image shows that the proposed location falls under the moderately visible location, and that's based on it being visible from 3 to 9 observation points, or 1 to 3% of the total observation points within the community. And a lot of that has to do with the parcel of land, or the parcels of land that Champaign Boulevard go around. There's a ridge that runs through the middle, and this property happens to be on the lower west side of that ridge. We've included some elevations as well, just for reference, but essentially this property does sit a little lower compared to most of the areas in this part of the community. Again, helping with visibility, but nevertheless, will provide a great need for telecommunications support in this area of the community for the Point Royal area, as well as the lower Lake Taneycomo area. As a result, staff recommends approval based on the following conditions. Number one, that the design, installation, and operation of the telecommunications tower and facilities shall be in accordance with all applicable city, state, and federal requirements. And number two, the telecommunications tower and facilities shall generally conform with the submitted site plan, Exhibit A, and shall conform with all codes and ordinances of the city. And number three, the facilities shall be appropriately screened with landscaping as required in Branson Municipal Code Chapter 94. And number four, documentation showing the issuance of the Federal Communication Commission's antenna structure registration shall be provided to the Planning and Development Department prior to the erection of the tower. And number five, if conditions 1 through 4 of this resolution authorizing the issuance of this special use permit are not acted upon or before July 7th of 2021, this special use permit shall be null and void. And finally, number six, if use of the telecommunications tower ceases, the applicant shall remove the tower within 180 days. Failure to remove the abandoned tower shall be grounds for the city to cause removal at the expense of the property owner. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Joel. Joel, I have one question. Will this structure be somewhat close to where the new fire station is proposed to be?
Yes, so I apologize, I should have pointed that out. So this property to the east, the vacant property, yes, that is the one that has been purchased by the city and is slated for the next fire station.
Okay. And so we have assurances, I guess, that with their electronic equipment and radios and something, this would not cause any problems with the fire department.
I'm going to let either Chief Fogel or our applicant speak to that.
Okay. Randy, do you want to say something here? And then we'll ask Mr. Rublinka, and he maybe between the two of you. So Randy Fogel, Division Chief, City of Branson.
Good evening. I have done some research on this in the preliminary plan review when it was submitted, and I haven't found any documentation that it would interfere with our radio frequencies, either us or police.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, Randy.
Randy.
I have a similar... Go ahead.
Go ahead, Commissioner Howden.
Yeah, I have a similar question. It's sort of along the technological lines, but I'm not sure maybe Joel will be able to answer. So is this specifically an AT&T tower only?
So that's the first tenant of the proposed location. However, we always hope for co-location in the future if other tenants want to be in this area.
I see. Because my question was, could this negatively affect the resort and the ability to receive signal at resort? Possibly it could help it. Would you say that? Or
I would say anytime there's an additional tower in the community, it's going to be more of a help than a hindrance.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank
you. So I had a question. The protrusion out from the building, I'm sure it's on here, but including the fence, do we know what that distance is?
So on the site plan, again, Paul may help us out, but I have it on this first.
Yeah, 15 feet, sir.
Yeah, that's right. I've got it there. So it's a 15 by 60 foot area. So it'll come out from the building 15 feet.
15 feet.
So will there be any bumper curves or, like secure or concrete filled barriers or poles to protect it?
There wasn't anything that I recall on the submitted plan for the review for this meeting.
Just a fence.
Yeah, Mr. Reblinka, are you there? Could you speak to that as far as like security with concrete things around it just to keep
happy to.
Traffic? Please.
The facility itself is the mini storage is entirely fenced and secured 724. So AT&T or the carrier's access will be off the north gate, which will be locked at all times unless they're coming in and out. The remaining space in the back of the property is for emergency services or bypass as needed. But they're just putting in a typical fence. They don't see a need to put bollards in or anything to prevent somebody from driving through and crashing into the equipment.
That is not something that's normally done, Mr. Rubinka.
No.
I will add that the only requirement if they use propane to power the generator, if needed, bollards would be protecting the propane tank.
Right. And that's probably in our ordinance.
Or a gas meter.
Yeah. Valves, yeah. Right.
That was the term I was looking for.
Any of the commissioners have any other questions, either for Randy or for Joe? Yes, Commissioner Nichols.
Randy, is this tower high enough for the fire department to be a potential client? Will this support your communications antenna as well?
I'm not part of the communications team that does, research for radios, that type of stuff. That would go through the directors.
More curiosity.
Yeah. And the IT department.
Yeah, of course. Thank you, Commissioner Nichols. Anyone else? Thank you, Randy. Appreciate your time. Is there anyone here who wishes to ask a question or make a comment about this? Mr. Reblinka, you're still there, I guess?
Yes, I am.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell the commission and the audience at this time about the item?
No, Mr. Hornicle did a fabulous job explaining our proposal. We are in agreement with the conditions 1 through 5 and ask for your approval. Okay. But I'm here to answer any other questions you may have.
Okay. Thank you. Commissioners, any last chance for the applicant? Yes, Vice Chair. Davis?
There were 6 items. Are we in agreement for all 6?
Yes. Well, if the tower is not used, it'll be removed. We're in agreement with that. Property owner is not excited about it, but we're in agreement.
Okay. Just wanted to be sure. And I have a question for Joel. Well, this makes good sense. It is a 100-foot structure in front of what looks like a fairly heavily developed condominium or resort location. Did we get any, were they informed?
They, as an adjacent property owner, they received notification and we did not hear anything. Actually, this was sent out twice for both meetings and we did not receive any comments from any of the property owners that were submitted to.
And this is about an 8-foot diameter pole at the base?
Paul?
Approximately 8 foot, yes. Probably a little smaller.
And at the top?
At the top, I don't have the exact design, but it'd probably be about 4 foot at the top.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments by the commissioners?
No,
I'm just...
Yes, Mr. Lloyd.
For the commissioners, when we do have these towers, or we do have something that comes in a flightway for the FAA, or we're requiring their input, it is minimal, which really relies on us to develop the case, whether it would conflict with airspace. This one will not, and it's actually low enough to not be in a problem area. But let's don't rely on the FAA to tell us. We really need to lay it out for us.
Yeah, Paul was provided probably the most assistance we've gotten in dealing with this type of request over the last several years. He had great insight and some similar comments that the FAA document is not what we should be hanging our hat on. It's more the FCC's document that is a better document to work off of.
Yes, Commissioner Howden.
Yeah, Joel, when the attraction went up across from Walmart on the Strip, we had discussed kind of these 100-foot things, and is there going to be a limitation on them? Do we have a plan for that? I don't know if that's necessarily something that we should say that we limit, but I think there are certain different kind of concerns. So maybe when we go forward into 2030, we at least talk about that as far as, you know, how many of these things do we want over 100 feet? Things like that might be something to keep in mind for the future. So
yeah, it has changed a little bit in the last 5 to 6 years, because prior to the zoning code update, anything that exceeded 50 feet in height was required to go to the Board of Adjustment. And so it was an added process for these types of structures. However, there was so many that were coming through that the Board of Adjustment basically said, you know, we've approved all these. We don't see any issue. Just make sure the setbacks are in place, and we're comfortable with structures getting up to the 100-foot, so long as there's additional setback.
I wonder if it maybe over 100-foot could go to them, something like that.
At this point, the city, based on zoning districts in the community commercial district, you cannot build anything in excess of 100.
Right.
That's the absolute most. You would have to ask for a variance.
Gotcha. Okay, gotcha.
Thank you. Anyone else? No? Then we have resolution SU 20-4, which is special use permit to allow the telecommunication tower, the property at 1972 State Highway 165. So the chair would entertain a motion for approval.
So moved, Chairman Harris.
Thank you, Commissioner Nichols. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second, Commissioner Howden. Thank you. Any other comments by the commissioners? No. All those in favor signify by raising their hand. Opposed, same sign. Thank you, commissioners. Joel, we're rolling.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you, Joel. Thank you, commissioners.
Thank you.
I assume we passed. Thank you. I couldn't see anybody's hands.
It passed unanimously, Mr. Rubenkamp.
Thank you very much. Have a great night.
And you guys too. Thank you.
Good night.
Joel, I think we have some changes to some code amendments.
Yes. The next item is a request for a municipal code amendments to Chapter 94, Zoning. We are proposing amendments to specifically Articles 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, and 7. Staff had some time during the recent City Hall closures to not only rearrange the department, but also go back through the zoning codes, specifically Chapter 94, and just kind of think about some of the codes that we've noticed over the last several years since all of our updates that have maybe been inconsistent or didn't quite have the same requirements that we thought they did when we first were written. So we went back through, and those are the proposals we want to go through tonight. Nothing significant, I would say, overall, but very much things that can be cleaned up to make our code even better. So just to give a quick refresh on where we've been over the last 8 years or so, starting from the Community Plan 2030, which was adopted in 2012, one of the Planning and Development Department's biggest to-do items was updating the codes. So we first took on the zoning code in 2016, and then the subdivision and landscaping code was brought over in 2018, and then finally the sign code in 2019 to create our unified development code, getting all development codes in Chapter 94. So again, we've been working with it for a handful of years now, and these were ones that we believe would benefit change to make the code better. So I'm going to go through these in pretty summary detail, not in depth, but if anybody has additional questions, by all means, we can go through it a little bit more. So the first one's pretty simple. It's in Article 1 in general. This is our definitions area of the chapter, and there happens to be two definitions for local street. So we just want to remove one of them. Pretty easy. Article 2 for rules and regulations. What we're proposing is to update the application requirements specifically for our subdivision plats, mainly due to now our use of CitizenServe. So prior we required X amount of plats. It had been 3, so we could distribute them amongst the departments that were reviewing those plats. Now, with it coming in digitally, there's no need to specify that 3 copies need to be provided upon application. So we changed the wording of that. In Article 3, under the zone districts, for medium density residential right now, the minimum lot size for a detached residential building type is 5,000 square feet. This happens to be the exact same minimum lot size for low density residential. So I would chalk this up as just an oversight, something we didn't notice as we were going through it. It makes more sense that as you have more dense opportunities through the zone districts, that minimum square footage should fall in line equally between the two districts. It does, which would be 5,000 in low density, 3,000 in high density. The common sense approach would say 4,000 is the way to go. So again, we think this is a pretty simple cleanup. Article 4 for uses. Within the use table, this was another one that I remember staff talking about quite a bit back and forth with our consultant, the topic of manufactured homes. It had been a special use at one time in our review, it became a permitted use, and then it just got struck, except for being allowed in high density residential. So what we're proposing now is to add it back in as an allowed use in the agriculture, low density residential, and medium density residential district, because we have the standards in place. This is a structure that has several requirements under our supplementary use standards, such things as being required to be on a foundation, being required to have windows on the front, being required to have gable roof over the door. So there's a lot of safeguards in place already built into the code that will prevent something unsightly or that would deter against property values within our residential district. So that's, again, why we have the confidence to add this as a permitted use, knowing that those safeguards are in place. And those safeguards were written to allow it in all the districts. Again, it was just something that was batted around and never ironed out.
Commissioner Lloyd.
My question is, okay, so manufactured homes and mobile homes, are they the same?
They're not.
Okay.
We have different definitions in our code for both of those.
Okay.
So the next one under Article 4 still is to update our outdoor sale and promotional event standards to be more clear and match the intent. Some of the wording in the section, particularly talking about blocking pedestrian ways in front of businesses, it somewhat contradicts itself in the fact it says you shouldn't block pedestrian ways, but then you must make sure to keep 3 feet clear. So we've cleaned that up. And then there was a statement about the minimum parking requirements. Well, we have maximum parking requirements now, so that was also a contradictory statement. And then finally, in Article 4, remove reference to minimum parking requirement. Again, this was another reference that doesn't make sense any longer now that we have a maximum parking requirement. Article 6, a couple of things pertaining to off-street parking. The first, removing the exemptions and adjustments section. It's not needed. We had some opportunities in there for people, like there was a requirement for bus parking, that if you had heavy bus traffic, that one bus would equal 10 parking spaces. Well, again, I'm kind of beating a drum here, but with a maximum parking code, you don't need those standards. And then for stacking lanes and drive-throughs, there was a requirement about providing separation. However, over the years, as we've dealt with drive-throughs since the code's been in place, those separation requirements in some of the challenging properties have not really worked out well with the site plan. And so some people have done it, some people have not. And so just to be fair to all those doing drive-throughs, are proposing to remove that requirement. Finally, Article 7, landscaping and screening. We have several tables that are referenced as site perimeter landscape areas. However, it's caused confusion for several of our professionals that have been working in that code, really those requirements pertain to buffering requirements. So a simple rename there will help clarify what that table is for. We also have several different ways of saying the same thing for a site triangle. We have clear site triangle, intersection site triangle, driveway site triangle. So all those different variations, I think we had three different definitions for the same thing. And that was simply from having it being a landscaping requirement and a sign requirement. So when it all got pulled together, it was just an oversight not to clean all that duplication up. So that's what this is proposing. We found a kind of lingering reference to the tree board, which we need to remove. That didn't get taken care of earlier. And then finally, this may be one of the more significant changes being proposed, is to add regulations for fences within residential lots. There haven't been many cases over the last several years, but we have had a couple that had some issues because of fence heights. So what we're proposing is very simple, just three bullets, three regulations. The first being that any fence shall not exceed 3 feet in height when it's in the front yard of a residential property and shall be at least 50% open. The second is that any fence within a residential lot shall not exceed 7 feet in height when it's in the side or rear yard. And that height matches up with the building code. Any fence proposed to be built 7 feet or less does not require a building permit. Any fence in excess of 7 feet requires a building permit. So that's how we arrived at that height. And then the third, use of barbed wire, scrap metal, tarps, pallets, or other non-fencing materials are not permitted. Again, just for residential lots. We have no fencing regulations for commercial lots. We figured we would start here. As a result, staff recommends approval and happy to answer any questions.
Joel, on the fencing, if you had a lot in residential, say it was an adjoining lot to a house and the homeowner bought the adjoining lot, is there technically a front yard?
So per code, that front yard line is based on the front line of the house, and it would extend to the extents of their property. So it would continue on to adjacent properties if they were owned by the same owner.
I see. Okay. Thank you. Any other commissioners have any questions for Joel at this time?
Yeah.
Yes, Commissioner Nichols.
Joel, back up on item two when you were talking about removing the requirement for three sets of plats because of the new online portal. Is it, to be clear, now only possible to submit through the online portal?
There are
no paper submissions.
We have no opportunity to receive paper. We're going digital.
Thank you.
We've gone digital.
Gone.
We are there. Any other questions by the commissioners of Joel? Hearing none. Is anyone else here who wishes to ask a question or make a comment in regard to these proposed changes in the municipal code amendments? Seeing none?
I have a question.
Yes, Mr. Lloyd.
If we vote affirmative on this, it still has to go to council, is that correct?
Correct. It's because it's in Chapter 94 that you all have to review and make a recommendation.
Hearing no other comments or questions, we would be looking at Resolution 20-12.1, recommending approval of the Municipal Code Amendments to Chapter 94 on zoning. Chair would entertain a motion for approval.
I so move.
By Chair Davis. Second by Commissioner Romine. Thank you. Any other comments by the commissioners? All those in favor signify by raising their hand. Opposed, same sign. Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Joel. Bring into another special use permit, I think, Joel.
Yes, so the next three items are our new items for tonight's agenda. The first of which is a request for a special use permit to operate a restaurant with a drive-through within the property located at 1715 West 76 Country Boulevard, Branson, Missouri. The owner of this property is JHW Trust and is being represented by the applicant, Todd Chandler of CPWG Incorporated. This property, as you can see from the image, which had been the bumper boat amusement that is no longer with us, it was demolished in 2019. This property is currently zoned entertainment. It does include the skate world, which you can see there in the background of the image. And again, the applicant's request is to operate a restaurant with a drive-through. A vicinity map showing this property is located on the north side of State Highway, 76 Country Boulevard and Truman Road, across from a drive-through that we actually dealt with a couple months ago. Our next vicinity map showing the current zoning, again, entertainment surrounded by properties to the west, east, and south, the same. It is also bordered by properties that are medium-density residential and low-density residential there to the north. Existing land use with the Skate World, so therefore it still has entertainment land use associated with it, as most of the other properties do in the area as well. Our orthometric, in case we need them, as always. So now to the specifics of the request. We have a site plan here to the right. Skate World is the building here at the top of the image. And then you'll notice the small building down here in the southwest corner. That is to be Table Rock Coffee Roasters. Just to give some background with our Unified Development Code that was adopted back in 2017, we added specific regulations for drive-thrus, one of which required any drive-through in the entertainment district to come before you all. And then we also have supplementary use standards, of which the applicant's proposal does meet those requirements. The highlights being that the window location where service will be rendered to the vehicles will be located on the north side of the building. And they also have provided space for the six vehicles. However, the way that the design has been established, there is room for more than six vehicles, but they have shown the minimum amount, which is the six. And then the layout promotes circulation to exit via Truman Drive. So from the pickup window, traffic will continue and then be able to exit out onto Truman Drive, which we believe will provide more safe access to 76 Country Boulevard as well. So as I said, all of the information and design is compliant with Branch Municipal Code Section 94-87. As a result, staff recommends approval based on the following conditions. Number one, that the drive-through and associated facilities shall generally conform with the submitted site plan, as you just saw, which is referred to as Exhibit A, and shall conform to all codes and ordinances of the city. And number two, the applicant shall apply for and receive a business license from the city prior to any business operations, and that license shall remain in good standing. And number three, if all conditions of this resolution authorizing the issuance of this special use permit are not acted upon or on or before July 7th, 2021, this special use permit shall be null and void. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Joel. Any of the commissioners have a question for Joel at this particular time? Seeing none. Is the applicant or are there representatives here that wish to answer any questions or make a comment? Yes, sir.
Good evening. I'm representing the applicant and the business owner as well. Todd Chandler with CPWG, 301 West Pacific Street.
Okay. Everything going as far as you want on schedule for getting ready and up and going and having the window ready to go?
Yeah, my client's actually working on the Table Rock Coffee Roasters, the roasting facility, which is out in the county.
Okay.
So where they're going to be basically making all the product and bringing it into Branson.
Okay.
So, yep. Yeah, yep. So everything's, my other client with Skate World, Lee, is actually working on preparing the parking lot right now. So if you drive by there, you'll see the base rock has been placed for the site.
Good.
So my client is actually very anxiously awaiting approval of this so he can move forward with his construction.
Certainly. Any of the commissioners have a question?
Todd.
Yeah.
This is an FYI for me, but did Skate World own that?
Yes.
Bumper boat thing? Okay.
Yep, that is correct.
And the way it looked like they commingled the parking lot, it's like a win-win.
Yeah, originally Lee approached me, the owner of Skate World, about doing just a larger parking area.
Right.
And then in the meantime, we designed the plans for that, got it permitted, and then Chris, the owner of Table Rock Coffee Roasters, approached Lee about leasing that property.
Gotcha.
And bringing some much-needed business to that area. So,
thanks.
Good, Commissioner C. Yes, Commissioner Nichols.
Yeah, just for curiosity's sake, where is the roasting facility located?
It's down by, off of State Highway 86, down by the Long Creek Bridge. So kind of by the entrance to Long Creek Campground, there's a little commercial.
High side?
Yep, correct. Yep.
Like in that strip mall?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yes, sir. Yep.
Fantastic.
Yep. So Chris has been working on getting that. Actually, he just got his refrigerator yesterday. So.
Good. Congratulations.
Yes, Vice Chair Davis?
Yeah. Could you kind of fell asleep down here and don't underhear how the traffic's going to circulate through the lot now with your addition?
Yeah, so traffic's going to typically enter in off of either Truman Drive or off of West 76 Country Boulevard. You'll see that there's six stacking spaces that we show for vehicles coming in off of Truman Drive with the capacity to add more stacking vehicles wrapping around up to the, towards the north. Once vehicles go through the drive-through, which is on the north side of the building away from Highway 76, they will exit, go on to Truman Road or Truman Drive, and if they want to enter 76, they'll go down to the intersection of Truman and 76. Otherwise, they can cut through the neighborhood as well, because there'll be a lot of, you'll have tourists, you'll also have residents that visit this new facility as well.
What's your average number of cars per however long a time frame you want to tell me about? Per hour, per minute?
I may defer to Chris on that as far as his operating hours. Obviously, it's going to be peak in the morning. But, you know, with he's going to also have some baked goods coming from...
Operating hours? I'm sorry. Operating hours, was that the question?
No, what's your cars per minute, cars per... What is your rate of turnover for,
right.
For the automobile lanes?
Yeah, the daily traffic count of that location is 27,000 vehicles a day. For a drive-through, you can expect about 2% of those to stop by, which is 400 and something a day, 420, something like that.
Yeah.
So what do you think your capacity is based upon your parking availability and your speed of your delivery of your product? How many cars can you serve in an hour, a minute, or whatever? You get my question. How fast does the traffic move through?
Right. What's the amount of time per client and as they come through, you think? A couple minutes?
Or? Yeah, 2-3 minutes. Yeah.
Let's see, Chris, if you would sign in, there should be a sign-in sheet right there,
sure.
Too, and then be sure and state your name in the microphone. That'd be good.
Yeah, my name is Chris Richard.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for doing that. Any of the commissioners have any more questions for Chris or Todd as we're yes.
Can you just confirm that is there any walk in at all or is this drive through?
There will be walk up. There's basically a walk up window on the front of the building, so on the southwest face of the building. There's actually, you'll see that kind of shaded area around the building, the gray shaded area. That's kind of a large patio area. We'll put probably some picnic tables, could potentially in the future look at, well, hopefully, incorporating something for maybe a plaza area with the Highway 76 project, because this is one of the ideal properties for that. With that extra real estate there at the corner between that patio and the sidewalk promenade, you will see that we've also accommodated the 25-foot sidewalk and utility easement for the future Highway 76 project as part of this.
Good.
Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner C. Anyone else? Yes, Commissioner O'Day.
With the plaza and the walk-up being on the, I guess that's the south side of the building, that means everybody that walks up, that parks, is going to have to walk in between the drive-through traffic to get to the front of the building. Are you concerned about that hazard?
We have talked about that. That's part of the issues we're working out with the building review process right now. So that was a comment that came up. It's really, there's so many things that we're trying to design for and still be able to build this. We anticipate most of the walk-up traffic would be coming from Highway 76 side, which obviously coming from the Highway 76 side, if there is a future sidewalk connection there, they won't have to cross the drive up. But we simply can't put the drive-through on the other side because then it's not in compliance with the zoning code. Not having a drive-through on the 76 facing side of the building. So we really don't have any options. But good question.
Yeah, Joel.
Yeah, so staff obviously also looked at that when we were working with the applicant on the site plan. And looking at the requirements, it does talk about that there shouldn't be any conflict with pedestrians going to the location through the drive-through designated stacking lanes. So in working with the applicant, we saw there was an opportunity for people to go in front of the vehicles that would not be going through the drive-through lane. So whatever they can do to get people that direction of the building as opposed to the south side would be the way to have that handled.
Thank you. Anyone else? Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there anyone else here who wishes to make a comment or ask a question? Any other comments or questions by the commissioners? No? Then we are looking at Resolution Special Use Permit 20-5, which is a special use permit to operate a restaurant with a drive-through within the property located at 1715 West 76 Country Boulevard here in our town. We would entertain a motion for approval.
I'll make that motion.
Commissioner Lloyd, is there
second.
Second.
Thank you. Commissioner C. Any other comments or questions by the commissioners? All those in favor signify by raising their hand. Opposed, same sign. Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. Good luck. Appreciate you coming to town. Joel?
Our next item this evening is a request for a special use permit to operate a campground and vehicle park within the property located at 2527 State Highway 248, Branson, Missouri. You may think that this is deja vu, back from our May 5th meeting. However, this is a new request from the applicant, so we will be presenting it as a new request. Again, the owner for this is U.S. Flanson Cultural Entertainment, LLC, and the applicant is Michael Mirott. Current zoning for the property is community commercial, which is CC. And again, the applicant's request is to operate a campground and vehicle park. And we have a view of the property taken from State Highway 248 looking to the west. Vicinity map, again, showing the property with the theater located towards the west or rear of the property. Vicinity map showing the current zoning of community commercial, bordered by planned developments to the north, west, and south, as well as a property there that's zoned agriculture, and some other properties in the area that are outside the city limits and zoned community commercial as well. Vicinity map showing the existing land uses for the subject property. It is currently entertainment. They are pursuing the theater use for the property. And then again, just some highlights of the request. This request is to park two recreational vehicles or trailers within the property for temporary use for sleeping areas for staff. The units themselves or the trailers themselves are approximately 46 and a half feet long by 8 feet wide or 372 square feet. Specifically, the campground area that is being proposed is 0.3 acres of the property, or just around 1% of the property, which is 24 acres in size, and that's to be located in the southeast portion. This is one of the rear parking lots. You'll notice the building here to the upper right or the northeast of the image. So this parking lot sits to the south and west of the building. The bathrooms and showers for those staying within these temporary sleeping areas would be provided through the existing theater. That the area happens to be backstage, so in close proximity from the location being proposed. And the theater also then has the opportunity to provide a shelter during significant weather events. We have an image here of the trailers as they're proposed, as well as a plan showing the floor space of those trailers. Next, I'm actually going to turn it over to the Assistant City Administrator, John Manning.
Mr. Manning.
Hi, good evening, Commissioners. I'm John Manning, the Assistant City Administrator for Branson. The mayor often refers to me as an ombudsman or advocate to help businesses work through city processes. And I'm here tonight. It's a pleasure to be here tonight to help out the Encore Theater work through this special use permit. The slide up here may look a little odd. I'm stealing some of my old soldier lingo. As we all know, tourism plays a very important part of Branson, kind of pays our bills. If you live and work in Branson, you're in the tourism business regardless of what you're doing. And a bottom line, what is good for tourism is good for everyone. To take a lesson from my soldier time, I would call tourism the center of gravity for the Branson economy. The critical capability is that tourism feeds the economy and grows the city. The critical requirements include live shows and attractions. And the critical vulnerabilities of this industry are venues and performers. We have to ensure we do what we can to help these venues and performers have an affordable, safe, comfortable, and help provide them what they need in order to not only grow their businesses, but grow our city. Well, I'm always willing to help and stand up for our citizens and our businesses. It's always an honor to be here with live shows. Again, tonight we're here to talk about the Encore Theater property at 2527 State Highway 248. Some of you may remember this as the Meltellus Theater and Home Apartment, or Tri-Lake Center, or the Branson Event Center. Two slides you've already seen, two sets of photos, just with a couple other depictions on them. This is the first of two showing the aerial photos of the 24-acre property. Second of two, which highlights the 0.3-acre secured area within the 24-acre property. I did put little yellow stars there, but I didn't want to exaggerate them because the property is really not that big. I have some videos I want to show. This is me. I'm actually not driving. My daughter drove me. I took the video, so I was safe. This is me pulling into the theater complex. Purpose of the video is to highlight the complex itself, how far we're having to drive before we even see these two trailers. Building right in front of me is simply the theater itself. As you can see, I'm going to turn to the left. Whatever parking lot we're looking at, we can't see these trailers. There's no vicinity, there's nothing in the vicinity that can actually see these trailers. And I'm going to pull to the very back south parking lot, which is the entrance to the secured compound. And right when I get to the gate, you'll be able to see the two trailers.
Well, this is going, how can they be there if we haven't approved this yet? They're not using them, the trailers, or?
This was in prep for them being used. And this is just a still photo of that gate access into the apartment complex, if you will, the secured 0.3 acres at the back of the building. A picture of head-on of the two trailers. And just to highlight, this is a snapshot of the website for the Travel Recreation by Design. These are multi-suite living quarters designed as bunkhouses, designed as living quarters. This is a view from the building, looking down, quote, the alleyway to get into the trailers. A view from the side. I'm going to show a video of me walking into one of the sleeping quarters. As I was walking in, it reminded me of what I refer to as pod or capsule hotels that I stayed in Europe and Asia throughout my life. The next video shows me walking from the trailer into the building, if you will. Very similar to the hostels in Europe, the amenities, if you will, the bathrooms, the kitchen, et cetera, the recreation room are common use, so they're inside the facility. The door on the left is the sleeping quarters for the female performers. Where I'm headed to the right are some common bathrooms, some common showers, and just typical restrooms that you'd find in any facility. As I walk back down the hallway, I'm proceeding into the kitchen and common and recreation area. Again, this was Mel Tillis' old apartment. Quite an elaborate kitchen setup. Very nice rec room. Good kitchen. Kind of a dining area you're about to see. The next view is literally walking back out toward the two sleeping quarters. This next video is simply to highlight that, again, there's no property around that can see these two trailers.
And John, that's a big drop-off right there, too.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of reluctant to say that there's nothing around that can see these two trailers, because as part of my oversight of the city and county lodging inspection team, I can honestly say that from not only a safety and a comfort and a security aspect, you know, these two trailers are nice places to sleep in compared to some of the other places we have in town. I couldn't help but throw this up. It's kind of a great history inside that place. That sign on the left, it's a little joke regarding one of the previous owners, Mel Tillis, that's still there. And it's inside the kitchen for fire suppression. Kind of in conclusion, I'm sorry, before I make my concluding comment, I did receive a letter from the Chamber of Commerce supporting the Encore and the special use permit. And in conclusion, it's been an honor for me to be here today to help out the Encore work through this process with you. Aiding the tourism industry in Branson is a priority function. This special use permit will allow the theater to maintain a safe, comfortable, secure, and economical option for the performers, and City of Branson staff recommends approval.
And to wrap things up, to just go through the conditions as stated, staff does recommend approval of the request based on the following conditions. Number one, the special use permit is not transferable in any manner and therefore shall not be transferred from owner to owner. If U.S. Plants and Cultural Entertainment LLC ceases operation for 6 months or more, the special use permit shall be null and void. And number two, the installation and activities covered by the special use permit shall be in accordance with all applicable city, state, and federal requirements. And number three, a maximum of two spaces for recreational vehicles or campsites shall be allowed within the existing parking area located to the south of the existing building. And number four, necessary utilities shall be permanently installed for each campsite. And number five, any recreational vehicle shall not occupy any campsite longer than 9 months within a 12-month period. And the number of occupants within each recreational vehicle shall not exceed the limits established by the manufacturer or the building codes as adopted by the city. And number six, the applicant shall apply for and receive a business license from the City of Branson prior to any business operations, and that license shall remain in good standing. And number seven, if all conditions of this resolution authorizing the issuance of this special use permit are not acted upon or before July 7th, 2021, this special use permit shall be null and void. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Joel. Yes, Commissioner Howden.
So obviously, as many of you know, I grew up in this building. We did 2 shows a day, 6 days a week, every day but Monday, every month but January. I'm glad you showed the thing about how long it takes to get to that specific parking lot. Actually, that was where the band parked, where the performers parked, you know. As you mentioned, that was my grandpa's apartment right there, as well as my aunt lived there at one point, and even the preacher who, when Hobby Lobby bought the building and then donated to the Assemblies of God, lived there. So you're right, it's not visible. A concern that I've heard in the past about this is, you know, we're going to possibly have, you know, a trailer in every theater now in Branson that's going to be utilizing this. What I would say is this is specifically, for all intents and purposes, a residential part of the complex, you know, and it is a very significant complex. By square footage, the largest theater in Branson. So I think that if we moved forward with something like this and then we were to get a similar request in the future, I would say that at least my barometer as a commissioner would be if it was adjacent to a part of the complex that was considered residential. So maybe the Dutton Theater, where they have the Dutton's Hotel or something like that. So that would be kind of my litmus test about how to move forward with something like this, that if it is adjacent to something that's purely intended to be a residential part of the situation, then I think that we should move forward with it. So, thank you.
Any other questions of Joel or Mr. Manning? Yes, Vice Chair Davis.
I actually have a question for Mr. Howden. Since you grew up in the building, the video seemed to me like that there is a large area dedicated for what was and still is used for residential purposes. Is there any chance that 700 square feet of that could not be found to repurpose for this bunkhouse use that we're proposed to put on a parking lot in a somewhat conflict-oriented to all the normal codes that we have looked at previously, Marshall?
When he stepped out of the apartment area, you saw the significant backstage area as well. It's funny, we would go to shows as a kid, and I would say, oh, can we go backstage to the Presleys? And my mom would say, you know, it's not quite as significant as what we have backstage. You know, we'd run around back there. That there's an entire loop right there that are dressing rooms. Now, I don't know if those are intended to be utilized going forward as dressing rooms. And then you saw the backside of the building there. That actually leads to the whole entire, there's a tunnel complex in the building.
There's a what?
A tunnel complex under the building.
You're kidding.
A giant tunnel complex that housed our water tank for the rain curtain that we had. That my grandpa actually had an entire refurbishing of classic cars thing. I mean, it's a giant place. Now, above that, that's connected to the loop of the dressing rooms, was what we called the rehearsal hall. It's a rather significant space. Now, since the church had it, what I know is they've pretty much limited that space. They built essentially a school in there that really limited that space. So I would imagine maybe that might have been their original, a good place for kind of like what you're talking about, but that open area has been somewhat limited, at least from the construction that I've seen since then. You know, so I don't know. I think maybe to answer your question would be perhaps those dressing rooms, which was, there's probably, what, 25, 28 dressing rooms. Yeah, so quite a significant amount. I don't know what their purpose and intention on that is. So,
interesting point.
No problem.
I have a question for Joel then to follow up. Joel, this was an item you mentioned that was presented to the board previously.
Correct.
How is this different?
So the request that was brought before you all in May had 4 campsites, and the number has been reduced to lessen the impact on the property to 2 with this request.
Joel?
I have a question, but everything else is the same.
Correct.
As far as accommodations and facilities, everything's the same, just reduction of 4 to 2.
Correct.
Correct? Thank you.
Joel, what constitutes a campground?
They must have a minimum of 2 campsites.
Just 2?
Yep.
Maximum?
There is no maximum. You have to have at least two to be a campsite. Otherwise, the code is very specific that no person can stay in a trailer unless it's in a facility designed for that use.
Right.
So for somebody to stay in that trailer in somewhere other than a campground within city limits would be illegal per code.
Yes, Commissioner Howden.
One more thing to add. The whole area is fenced off
And yes, you can close it in. As you can see there in one of those pictures, there was a wooden loading dock, which wasn't always there. Originally, you could pull a semi up and load it in. The Branson Collector Car Auction used this facility for many years and used that to load cars in onto the stage. All that is to say, this was never intended. Another thing is my granddaddy had his garden right there along the side of the building. This was never intended to be an area where patrons would be, for a number of reasons. So well, that's
another and point. I believe that sign there that says the apartment is from your granddad.
Yeah. So,
Joel, back to the campsite and campground. What do each of the campsites have to have?
Let's see here. I thought we had that in the packet. Let me pull it up really quick. I can bear with me for a second. So essentially the only requirement that we have in code for a campsite is it's a rentable space of campground or within a campground having 580 square feet or more. So that is the only requirement in code for a campsite.
To be a campsite. Okay, so for item 4, it says necessary utilities shall be permanently installed for each campsite.
So given that the restroom facilities are provided within the building, the necessary utilities would not include water and sewer. Had those facilities not been provided, then they would have had to be permanently installed. As far as electric, I'm not sure if they'll be making an electrical connection or not. I would assume so. So simply what we're saying is that that connection needs to be a permanent one.
So now
these facilities have the option of restrooms, showers, et cetera. They're not in use. They're using the ones inside the building.
Okay. And how is electricity fed to the bedrooms and stuff?
Mike, you showed me this, but you can explain it better. Yeah, come on up. It's right behind that. This is Mike Mayrow.
I'm Mike Mayrow. Thank you.
I'm Mike.
What we ended up doing is there is already a permanent disconnect already set up for Mel Tillis's trailer that was there for however long it was there. Forever. We duplicated that main disconnect and added a secondary. So each trailer has its own power source from the disconnect to the trailer.
So there's one cord, so to speak, that comes from each one and plugs into this.
That's correct. Structure. And it goes over the walkway, but there is the safety guard that goes over the walkway.
Okay. Yes, Commissioner Howden.
Yeah, one final thing, just like he mentioned, I can't help but notice that is the exact same spot that my grandpa's tour bus would sit, and when Pam was in town, hers next door. When my granddaddy would go to Clay Cooper's Theater, there's obviously a apartment on the bus in and of itself, and he would sleep there. I just don't see necessarily the big difference. I feel like it's already sort of been used for that in the past, as far as the tour bus would sit on that exact same spot. So I can't help but notice that this isn't that far of a stretch from what was already going on.
I have a question. How many are we housing in these two trailers again?
12.
12 in each trailer?
Sleeps 11.
And they were, I think you told us last time, at an expense of 40-some thousand a trailer?
Yeah.
So what's the difference between rent? Marshall was talking about how it's the biggest theater in the area with all this extra space. What's the difference between moving these people inside and renovating that?
I think it was we were trying to get something that was functional as quickly as possible. These performers arrived into Branson the end of December. We were planning, we did do the premier show on February 29th, and we were planning on opening April 3rd. So we are trying, there is so much going on with rehearsals and setting up all the equipment that we just felt that this was probably the best option to keep us moving forward.
This would be cheaper to put them in trailers?
Absolutely.
Than bringing them inside?
Yeah.
But there is space inside, correct?
It is. Just for clarification, we are not able to allow them to sleep into the dressing rooms. You have to have two exits.
But if it was renovated, I'm asking about renovation. He was talking about all the space that's not used. That couldn't be used for anything like that?
We worked with Tom Pyle, which was the architect that designed the building. And we went over different scenarios of what areas we could use, but they were all very, very costly. Okay. We even looked, did a complete design of the basement and putting them down the basement, but abiding by all the policies, it got to be very cost prohibitive.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Commissioner. Well,
me?
Yeah.
Okay. First of all, I want to say thank you to our assistant city administrator. Congratulate you. I'm gratified to hear that language about our theaters and shows being a center of gravity. And I agree 100% that we need to do everything we can to support them as a city, as a commission, to help them be successful because it's to everyone's benefit. So I'm building on that. What I want to say, and it leads to a question for Joel. First of all, I'm not sure why we have to establish a campground in order for this to happen, because this does happen at theaters all over town all the time, in shorter durations and longer durations. I wonder if we're missing an opportunity here to make this friendlier for all the theaters, because the reason we unanimously voted this down the last time it came in front of us was because of the precedent. If we allow a theater to house their employees and campers, then who's going to ask us next to house their employees and campers? I spent a lot of time today talking to other people in other industries, and from a couple of hoteliers, not for their specific hotel, but their concerns were other hoteliers who have an incredibly difficult time getting people to clean their rooms, often offer them lodging in addition to pay as an incentive to hire and keep these employees, so they live in a hotel room, and it would be to their advantage to move those people to campers in their parking lots and free that hotel room back up for rental. And that's just an IE, so that would be my first question. What would prevent any other business in town from coming to us and also asking for a special use permit for a campground, for a part of their parking lot, to put in two trailers to house their employees as well? Is there any mechanism here that would prevent that from happening again, or already an existing code?
Yeah, I'm going to answer this one for Joel. He can answer, but I'm going to answer first.
Thank you.
And anybody can come to us and ask for a special use permit.
Sure.
And I'll tell you, when Joel first told me about this issue, I was thinking to myself, I didn't know the location, and I thought, I was immediately thinking 76, and I was immediately thinking trailers between the road in the hotel or in the theater. And my first thought was, well, obviously we don't want this. However, this particular venue has a very unique setup. It's 24 acres. It's in the middle of, first of all, it's not on 76. It's kind of out on the outskirts of town. And there is nothing, there is no view unless you're in a drone that can see these trailers. And again, I hate to even say that because they're not ugly.
Right.
Hate to disparage some of our lodging establishments in town, but they're far better looking than a good percentage of them. So to answer your question, you know, any theater that wants to bring this forward, or any venue, they can. And then it's a call on how it would impact the area. You know, it's just like the questions on the 100-foot tower. What's the visibility sector? Is this going to impact views? Is this going to make, you know, is this going to make something not look so good? That's not the case with this particular venue.
So are you saying that the precedent will not make it easier for, let's say, the Duttons to put trailers behind their theater as well? And I'm not talking about necessarily up on the strip. I'm not sure who would want to do that. But if they wanted to put a couple campers behind, they have a very large family. So perhaps some of their family members or staff might want to live behind the
Nothing would prohibit them from asking for a special use permit.
Understood.
And receiving the support of walking through the process.
Yes. Does the precedent make it easier for them to get their special use permit as well?
I'll just answer from a legal standpoint, no. That's what it's called, a special use permit, because each situation is absolutely unique. The Mel Tillis Theater is unique in its standing,
its
architecture, and where it's located. So. Yeah. You would be, in essence, comparing apples to oranges. If we were to say, hey, what we did over here on Mel Tillis' theater is something that we can roll out at the Duttons Theater. Mm-hmm. So, again, that's why each one of these is reviewed independently by this board under the special use and special circumstances of that permit. So,
again, precedent, I use that term in a different context, but this would not set up a precedent so that another theater can come in and say, hey, well, you did it over here, so you got to give it to us over here.
Yeah, that was my comment the last time this was in front of us. I think it's very well put together. I think it all looks very functional, and the precedent was my big concern, is how that would spread out. So now can we go back to the original premise of my conversation, which is, are we missing an opportunity to help all of our theaters? Because rather than going through the campground path that we're working on now, let's just talk about the Mansion Theater, who has the Oak Ridge Boys in. Let's pick 45 times a year. They stay 2 or 3 days when they're here for 45 dates, and they sleep. I'm going to say it's possible that they sleep in the coach in the parking lot. Do we have codes that prohibit that overnights in commercial parking lots?
Yeah, that's
so we have other facilities that have concerts the same way. And as a unique location that Branson is, we understand that that's an important part of our very important center of gravity. So again, I say, Joel, is there a possibility, is there a path here for us to abandon the camping path, allow Mr. Moreau to house his employees, who are contract entertainers, I assume, in that situation, while making it friendlier and easier for any of our theaters who may or may not already be doing this to now come into conformity?
It's definitely worth researching and looking into further. The wonderful aspect of utilizing special use as a tool in the zoning code is that every request has to come before you all and gives you all the opportunity, as well as the public, to go through what makes each one so special and the different characteristics of each to decide whether it should be allowed or not. I know campground associated with it's kind of making it a little fuzzy or a little awkward, but it's definitely something we can look into and research and bring some information back to the next meeting if that's what you all would like.
That's a great answer. Thank you.
Mr. Moreau, you said that there are some of the entertainers that are actually living in the theater?
Correct.
Okay, how many are in there?
12.
12. And how do we do occupancy for staying in an apartment in a theater?
In terms of?
Well, is this one apartment they're in? Do we have 12 people living in one apartment? Non-related people, like the 12 that he was saying. I assume they're females that are all staying in
the apartment. So it's based on square footage of available space. So right. If they're set up in rooms or dormitory, that those spaces have an occupant load based on the amount of square foot within those spaces.
So do we have enough square foot for 12 of them, or how do we know that?
I believe the way they're operating today has been reviewed as part of their business license process, and there was no, anything that was an issue had to have been rectified for them to be issued a business license.
Okay. I guess what's still, yes, Commissioner Kelly, did you want to say, I'm sorry.
John, thank you and your daughter for making the trip out there. Sometimes a picture is worth 1,000 words, as you know, and I appreciate that, and I appreciate the image inside the RV itself. Did you happen to go into one of the rest of the units? I mean, there's only there's two of those that you went in, which are the large ones. The other ones are all small. I wondered if you.
Yeah, I did. I just didn't take video. I mean, again, I've stayed in pod hotels before. It was just like a pod hotel.
I was just curious what that looked like. Get an idea of the square footage.
Same type layout, only a little smaller.
Much smaller.
Well,
I mean, I'm looking at the drawing here. That's why I was asking if I see what it looked like, because I think the last meeting, Mike explained that they are staggered on opposing sides.
Correct. But the neat aspect of the hostel-style living is they're only sleeping in this place.
Right.
They're working inside, and they're living, you know, the kitchen, the rec room, the dining room, the community area. They're doing that all inside. They're just sleeping in these.
Yes.
I understand there may be an attractive component for this setup here is that these will go on the road in the off season, perhaps.
That's what we're hoping. We're hoping that when we shut down January, February, and March, that we're traveling.
So what's attractive to you is if we say, no, you can't do that, they just sit there.
Sorry?
If we said you couldn't do this, those trailers would just sit there until you're ready to go on the road.
If you said we couldn't do this.
Right. So you're trying to utilize them year round.
Correct.
Mr. Moreau, did you look for alternative housing?
We did. We spent several months looking for houses that would accommodate the numbers.
Okay.
And it got to the point where we were looking at two $600,000 houses.
Did you? But there were no apartments or whatever that could be leased for 9 months. Or?
We looked at the apartment option, but the direction that we were given from our boss was to try to find some houses.
Right. Right.
We even looked at some apartments that were for sale.
Oh.
And that were right around the corner. Karen Best actually helped us locate a couple of units. Sure.
Commissioner Lloyd.
Okay, so in our previous discussion, Ms. Nichol, you had a lot of good input. You had researched with some other theaters. And so the president that we have talked about was one of the concerns. We had asked about the adequacy of these apartments. I think they're about 300 square feet. Is that each one of these little cubes?
Well, remember, they're not apartments. They're sleeping quarters.
I understand, but we also talked about in our region the other options for living facilities. There's an apartment complex right beside yours, for one thing.
Unfortunately for us, they're always full.
Yeah.
Fortunately for him, they're always full.
Yeah. So, part of my rationale on the first proposal was what Bob Nichols told us about and about setting precedent and about how we possibly were going to have these trailers all over the other theaters. But I just see this as a very high density. Actually, with this current COVID thing, it almost doesn't even add up right now, quite frankly. We're not separating very well.
I would argue that these are more separate than the majority of hotels in town, because each one's its own pod.
What is it, just one person in each cube?
Yes.
So, and where are these people staying right now? They're here now, you said?
They're staying in the trailers.
In these trailers? So how are we doing that when we don't have approval yet?
As we're working through this process, we're doing everything we can to help these businesses move forward. If this fails, then they will have to move.
Well, it already did fail once.
We made an adjustment and brought it back to you.
Yeah. So I'm concerned about the facilities.
Right.
There's got to be something better than living in a cattle trailer.
Yeah.
Sir, look at these aren't cattle trailers. These are designed as sleeping quarters. I mean, I've got the brochure up right there.
Yes, Commissioner Howden.
You know, the tour buses are less than that. The tour buses are literally bunks in the side of the, just my two cents.
I guess what bothers me is still the precedent thing. I worry about other places coming in. I know I've dealt with special use permits for years here, and I know how it works, and I know how we put conditions on there. But I also know that sometimes when this gets out or whatever, they can do this, that we'll end up having, and echoing Commissioner Lloyd, I really look to Commissioner Nichols with his insights into this because he keeps a good pulse on those types of things. And now Commissioner Howden, who is so very familiar with the place itself. It just bothers me, I guess, the fact that we might open this up.
It's going to be very rare that a 24-acre facility with a secured 0.3-acre lot that can't be seen by anybody is going to come before this commission.
So you're saying that any item that came to us, your recommendation as assistant manager would be if it was anything less than 24 acres, you would not recommend an approval of any other type.
I'm not putting a number on it.
Okay, but
I'm just highlighting factors.
It's simply what. Well, I understand that, but you're essentially telling us that that's part of what you're telling is that it is a huge area, So you would not be in support of using this on areas that were less acreage?
I might be, dependent upon where it's located, what can see it, and how secure it is.
Okay. So all of those items would enter into your opinion on whether it would be something good for the city or not?
Those would be the factors involved that I would look at.
Okay. Commissioner Howard.
This is just, like I mentioned, I'll say it one more time. This is just from my perspective as one commissioner. But my barometer would be if there was a designated place that was always used as residential. You know, that would be at least my barometer.
I have a comment.
Yes.
I concur. I sat on this planning commission for a long time, and you can talk about precedent in terms of the legalities of it. I agree. But the perception is really what we're going to deal with. And the perception of precedent is that this will be expected for this commission to provide consideration for those who come, independent of your criteria. The second thing that rubs me the wrong way is that someone gave permission for these individuals to use this facility after it had already been voted down. How did that happen, Joel?
I'll take
the call on that. Or how did that happen? Did you take responsibility for that?
I'll take responsibility for that.
Okay.
Any other comments or questions by the commissioners? No. Thank you, gentlemen. Is there anyone else here wishes to make a comment or ask a question? Any other comments or questions by the commissioners among ourselves? No, then we are looking at resolution SU-20-6, which is a special use permit to operate a campground and vehicle park within the property at 2527 State Highway 248 here in Branson. We need a motion for approval to continue on.
So moved.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions by the commissioners? Yes, Commissioner Nichols.
Yeah, I'd like to say once more that when we took this up 3 months ago, most of us concurred. We did have some conversation about the size of the quarters, et cetera, but I think most of us concurred that the plan to fulfill this as a campground was well executed. In terms of fitting the guidelines and making this work for the way they're trying to use our codes as they're set up to benefit their building. When we had our discussion about precedents, that's when we bypassed, well, even went beyond the amendment that was made and passed by folks who were trying to massage the campground side of it itself, and we did vote unanimously to fail the special use permit. I take the assurance from the city attorney that precedents will not weigh in additional special use permits. I also believe in the competency of this commission to weigh each one as an individual application, which is, it appears to me, the way the process is set up. And I see ready and eager participation by our city manager, our assistant city manager, and other staff to help accommodate our theater industry, which I have already agreed is an important center of gravity. And when I take those things into account, I just want everyone to know that I'm switching my vote and I support this issue as it's written.
Thank you, Commissioner Nichols. Anyone else? Hearing none, then we will call for a vote. All those in favor of the special use permit, please signify by raising their hand. All those opposed, signify by raising their hand. Joel, the vote was?
Yeah, it was a vote of 2-7. The item fails.
Okay, the item fails. Vote's 2-7. Thank you, Joel. I think we have one more item to deal with.
So our last item this evening is a request for high-density residential HDR zoning for the property located at 150 Gunner Hill Lane, Branson, Missouri. The owner of this property is Table Rock at Branson Incorporated and is being represented by Todd Chandler of CPWG Incorporated as the applicant. The property's current zoning is actually agricultural A. Within code, it states that upon annexation, if We do not have a zoning request application in hand that it automatically becomes agricultural until such date when they rezone the property. So this request before you is to rezone the property and establish HDR zoning for the property or high density residential. We have an image of the property, which happens to be just up the road from the first item this evening. And you can see Gunner Hill Lane there twisting through the middle of the image. A vicinity map showing this property, we don't have it outlined in red because the GIS files haven't been updated, but it's this portion, which is, again, north of the Chateau Cove development. Vicinity map showing current zoning. There's also agricultural properties to the east. As you can see, there's still quite a few properties that are not inside the city limits. That's that gray-toned or washed-out tone of the vicinity map. And then showing the proposed zoning, which matches the development there to the south. The orthometric views, again, you see Gunner Hill Lane twisting through all four of these images. And then some background on this property. Requested annexation first part of this year in January. It was then taken to the Board of Aldermen and finally approved at the end of February for annexation. We're trying to establish zoning for the property, which is reflective and complementary of the proposed use and adjacent uses. The applicant is proposing for a similar type of development, not identical, but similar to the Chateau Cove development in that there'll be nightly rental lodges available. So the HDR use would allow that, as well as the density that they're proposing to do. Again, this was a property that wasn't annexed at the time of the Community Plan 2030, so therefore it was not included in the plan's preferred land use, but it does match the surrounding properties as we've described in earlier slides. As a result, staff recommends approval. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Joel. Yes, Commissioner Nichols.
Joel, do you have a picture of the property now after it's been clear cut?
Unfortunately, we do not.
No current photos.
However, I will, to that point, they have been issued a land disturbance permit. It was requested and issued. They also had a blasting permit that was requested and issued for some blasting they've done the last couple weeks.
From the county?
From the city. So upon annexation, again, it was zoned agricultural, which gave them every right to request both land disturbance and blasting permits. And they do, we've seen some preliminary site plans. I can't recall. Yeah, I think they have submitted the building plans. They just haven't been approved yet.
Well, we've seen this on some other property by this same developer on Fall Creek Road, and I wonder if there's concern on your part or any of the other commissioners that while this is a completely legal path toward clear-cutting land before falling subject to the ordinances we have regarding greenery removal and tree removal, et cetera.
They've done, with their land disturbance permit, they've done the work.
Say that again, with their what?
With their land disturbance permit, mm-hmm. they've done what they were supposed to. This experience on this property has been far better than the experience we encountered on the development to the south, where we were chasing after them the entire time, trying to work together on annexation and zoning, case in point, tonight's first item. So the fact that we've been able to get this annexed, now zoned, they've gotten the proper permitting at the proper times, to me, we're working better on this development than we had with the previous one to the south.
Had we already passed this tonight and it's already been annexed by the BOA, this type of agricultural plan and clearing and plan for redevelopment would be acceptable under our current city ordinances?
Correct. So if the zoning was not, you know, recommended for approval by you all and not by the board, and for whatever reason the development did not happen, there are safeguards in code that basically require the applicant to take the property back to its previous state if no development occurs.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Commissioner Nichols. Anyone else have a question for Joel? Is there anyone here wishes to ask a question or make a comment in regard to this item? Then the chair would entertain approval for ZO 20-2, which is approval of a high density residential, which is called HDR, of course, for the property at 150 Gunner Hill Lane in Branson, Missouri.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. Romine, thank you. Any other comments by the commissioners in regard to the zoning request that will be forwarded to the Board of Aldermen? Nope. All those in favor signify by raising their hand. Opposed, same sign. Unanimous. Thank you, commissioners. Joel, we have some stuff coming up in August, perhaps?
Yeah, without the benefit of having a study session, just wanted to go over a quick couple of things. First of all, welcome Alderman C. to
Thank
the
you.
Planning Commission. Look forward to working with you and your insight as we take on many different items over the course of the next several months. So welcome. Also, wanted to update you all on our desperate search for assistance in the planning division. Perry, as you all know, or some of you may not know, left us at the beginning of June. His family relocated to the St. Louis area. His wife accepted a promotion with her career, and so they are in the process of relocating. So he gave his time and left the city of Branson. So we've been searching for both a senior planner and planner in hopes to cast as wide a net as possible. Senior planner, haven't gotten too many responses, but planner, we've been doing far better. So we've got 7 interviews set up for next week that we're looking forward to. All of the applicants are fresh out of college, some with a bachelor's degree, some with a master's degree, mainly from the Midwest. We've got 2 from Michigan, 1 from Illinois, 1 from Kentucky, 1 from West Virginia, and 1 from Springfield, Missouri. So excited to interview those folks, and hopefully we find somebody that we can welcome to the city of Branson family, and I can get some help. And the last thing I was going to mention is the city administrator, in addition to requiring masks for anyone that enters City Hall starting tomorrow, is that all board and commission meetings go back to virtual. So we will be doing that in August, just as we did in May. We'll be sending out information with the packet and be doing the go-to meetings again that you all participated with that could in May. We do have 2 items. They're both zoning items, so they should be pretty straightforward. But again, if anybody has any questions or concerns about that process, feel free to reach out to us. But we'll make sure you have all the information ahead of time and that everybody's comfortable with that process.
Thank you, Joel. A couple quick things. I wanted to thank the people that come and help us. Chris LeBeck, of course, is always here to help us. Tara Norback, who didn't get to speak today, but she's from Public Utilities. And Randy Fogel, of course, is always so good to help us with those items. And then many times we have one of the engineers here, Assistant Engineer Matt Felice. So Matt is retiring from the city, and I believe the 17th, I think, is his last day. And so I wanted to say kudos to him for being able to come most of the time and help us. He was very instrumental in helping move this community forward with the use of trails, et cetera, for our public that come to visit and for our citizens, of course. So we will miss his good insight and skills, and then hopefully we'll be able to work with someone else with those things. They'll be here. So I wanted to thank him. And also, thanks again to the commissioners for all your time, skills, and knowledge. We couldn't do all this, of course, individually. It takes a group to do it, and I appreciate everybody's input all the way along the line. Commissioner Lloyd.
I want to kind of expand on Mr. Nichols' comment about being naive to him. I think the same one you're talking about was off Fall Creek Road where they did the tree cutting. Mm-hmm. What can we learn from that, Joel, and how can we better that from happening? Is there anything we can gain out of that?
You know, it's been a topic we've talked about as long as I've been here, and it's just improving our relationship with the county. You know, there was a time where there was a past zoning administrator with the county that worked very closely with us. And anytime there was a sniff of any project or development, you know, we'd be in contact immediately and have the opportunity to work together. Unfortunately, that our relationship isn't as strong as it was at that time, so that's something we need to work on and try and make improvements to, so something like that can be avoided if possible.
I would echo those. If there's anything that the commission can do collectively or individually to help with communication with them as far as visiting with them or setting in on some of their meetings and learning about them or inviting them to some of ours at any point in time, communication is always good. So whatever we could do, from my opinion, why we'd be happy to do that, because that has happened many times through the years, Commissioner Lloyd knows, where we've just had a kind of a disconnect with those areas right outside the city limits, you know, and some things seem to happen that perhaps in our view are not the best for long-term quality of life issues here. So, Commissioner Howden.
So since we didn't have a study session, I just had a quick point of order that I think would be good as we talk about these things and think as commissioners that we need to think through, you know, what could happen in the future. And this would probably be best for Attorney Lebeque to be able to discuss this. But, you know, when we went through our sign code reformation, we limited, you know, the number of flags you can have. But recently we've been having a lot of things in our community about content on flags as well. So when we take in Reed versus the town of Gilbert, for example, we talk about that we can't read a sign as a city. However, when we were going through that originally, we did say that there could possibly be some exemptions, for instance, an illicit image on a sign or something like that, you know. So my question, and I'm truly not trying to be combative or anything, just trying to think through things. Are we really saying that you could fly a flag of the Axis powers of World War II or a terrorist organization, or is that truly what the city is saying as far as what we would allow on a business?
It's not what the city is saying. It's what the United States Constitution is saying. Unfortunately, to the chagrin of a lot of people, hate speech is protected speech in the United States. Because we disagree with an opinion, because we disagree with what a symbol may stand for, doesn't mean as at this local level, at the municipal level, that we have the power or the ability to ban it. So again, we have to respect our Constitution. We have to respect what makes this community great.
Sure. And so we're making a distinction between when we zone something that might not be in the, you know, that we would want to have in our entertainment district. We're making that distinction as far as a zoning versus limiting of symbolism.
I guess I don't follow what you're asking.
So, for instance, like we said, the medical marijuana facilities couldn't be licensed on our entertainment district for those same reasons, that we wouldn't necessarily want that as the front porch of the city. So that's the distinction we're making, that we can do that for zoning, but we can't do that for symbolism.
Our Supreme Court has made it pretty darn specific that we can't read the content of signs. If we do so, we are inviting ourselves as the city of Branson to litigation and to being another Supreme Court case. That's the distinction.
And it doesn't fall within inciting violence as far as speech that can incite violence?
Again, I will back up to the fact that hate speech, unfortunately, is protected speech in the United States.
Thank you.
Yes.
Could I circle back to Commissioner Lloyd's comment? I spoke with a couple of developers today, too, about that issue, what happened on Fall Creek, what happened on Gunner Hill, same developer. And the suggestion was that if the city were to get involved, perhaps we could consider an avenue. Working with the county, of course, is a great way to do it. That's the process and the right way to get them involved. But as a city, could we say, for instance, if you remove, and I'll pick a number, I'm not on the tree board or familiar with the terms, but let's say if you remove 70% of the vegetation on a piece of land, you can't annex it into the city for a period of 12 months, 18 months. One of them even suggested 5 years as a preclusion to clear cutting to save cost in fines, fees, whatever they call it, to the tree board while you await replanting of your vegetative plan. So those two things did come up from a couple of different developers in town as well. And I thought it was interesting that it was the developers themselves that suggested some type of resting period if you are obviously working through the process with the loopholes that are currently available.
I think, Joel, don't we do something as far as sewer easements and sewer, able to hook up to sewer, you have to do the following things in order to be hooked up to the city sewer?
Yeah, I mean, if someone wants to hook to sewer, they have to, one, annex if they're contiguous. If they're not contiguous, they still have to follow our building codes. We did have some issues with the Bee Creek area that does not allow us to do that in that area anymore, but in the other areas we can. But it is very frustrating as a staff person to have folks tell you point blank that they will develop outside the city limits because there are no building codes, there are very limited zoning codes, there are no tree removal codes. And so it's very difficult as a municipality being that extreme to the other of, you know, dare I say, very little codes to the codes we have. So it's a challenge. It always has been. We've tried to promote and ask of the community to make it a legislative priority to help us get the authority to do zoning regulations within a quarter, half mile, mile of the city limits numerous times over the last several years. But it has always fallen off the list when it gets to the Board of Aldermen for consideration as a final priority. But it's something that would help, for sure, as well as the idea that Commissioner Nichols provided.
Thank you, Joel. Commissioner Moore.
We're talking about Haney County Commissioners, but like this land that's out by the Chateau, is that in Stone County or Haney County?
That was in Haney County prior to annexation. It's right on the line, but it was Haney County.
The line goes right down the middle of that cove in front of them.
We might have to develop, and I think this would be worse, Stone County. I don't know whether they'd want to help us a bit. But, we might need to have a little bit of a relationship there because we have property.
Yeah, there's one piece that there's one property that jumps over the county line into Stone County. All the conversations and discussions I've always been a part of, the potential for development and growth is always within Taney County. Yeah. Any growth into Stone County has not been looked upon favorably.
A point of clarity, did you say that the city does have property or city boundaries that extend into Stone County?
It's a very small property that extends over. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Vice Chair Davis.
On that similar topic, and I agree with Commissioner Nichols' observations and the difficulty that has presented and the disappointment that it has created for property owners that live adjacent to those pieces of land that have that disturbance happen to them. Years ago, there was an attempt, maybe when there were better communications with the county, to create a contractual relationship with the county to allow us to take on the responsibility of planning and zoning types of areas that are adjacent to but extra jurisdictional. And that had some traction for a while, but then it lost. I don't know what that looks at. But there are other ways besides having the state legislature act upon this issue to see if we can't get that consistency. That's what we're lacking there. Very upsetting for people that I know that live in the area adjacent to that.
And the thought process obviously being those properties located on our fringes, there's a good probability that at a point in the near distant future they will be annexed. And so as opposed to the city continually annexing non-conforming properties into its city, you're already ahead of the game with getting quality properties. And that was a big concern with building codes was, you know, getting quality built properties when they're annexed into the city.
That's what community wealth is built upon, frankly, that sort of investment there. Yeah. And so as the revision of the community plan occurs, possibly this can be a topic that we could look at.
Thank you. Any other comments? Okay. Chair would entertain a motion for adjournment for this evening.
So moved.
Mr. Nichols, have a second.
Second.
Okay. Vice Chair Davis, all those in favor can stand up.